Will the House come back to order? Before the IDs, we had the bill before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Mackey?
Speaker, I'd like to call the House.
The House has been called. Would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the IDs, we had the bill before us in third reading and under debate. There is a call that's placed upon the House. The Sergeant of Arms has indicated that the call has been satisfied. Representative Moyer?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we quickly revert to introduction of guests?
Are there any objection? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At 12:20, I'd like to introduce my lunch date in Gallery A, Ricky Sipe, who is actually from the representative from District 21's district. She's the former executive director of the Literacy Council of Alaska, now a volunteer tutor with him, and is down here with the Alaska Adult Education Association.
Under introduction of guests. Okay. Introduction of guests. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't believe she's been introduced yet this year. In Gallery B, I'd like to introduce a friend of mine who's also on the Governor's Task Force on Boards and Commissions, I believe, Bonnie Williams.
Okay. This Representative Choquette, our introduction again.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. My lunch date is here, too. My son, Buck, and my daughter, Buzzy.
Always think better when you're a little bit hungry. Are you ready? This drops us, brings us back to the bill before us. It's under debate. Are you ready for the question? Representative Mackey.
Well, I wanted to respond to several members that had some specific concerns that I took notes to, Mr. Speaker. I'll make it brief. A member from 8B that was concerned about the which areas would apply and how he would be watching it closely. I would suggest that any members that are particularly concerned about maybe some hunting and fishing activities in their particular districts or regions, that I would suggest that you do talk to the department should this bill eventually become law, and express your concerns, because they're going to be analyzing all those over the next year and a half to decide what will apply and which won't. And I'm sure they'd appreciate your input as to some of the political aspects of some of them. To the member from 20A in Fairbanks who's concerned about the halibut, this clearly doesn't affect that, because those catch limits are set by the International Pacific Halibut Commission. That's a federal agency, and we don't have any control over that. Member from 11A, who was Anchorage, was concerned, about the prosecutor's view and abuse and so forth. I wish too, like you, I have some of the same concerns that that we don't live in a perfect world, and although we have laws on the books, there are laws that still are. Not followed and certainly violated and so forth. And I wish that wasn't the case, but I think that's just the situation that we're in, that we live in. Member from 1A gave a scenario earlier about the abuse of somebody taking a pickup truck and loading up with deer and doing different things. Clearly, again, Mr. Speaker, I would state in the bill, we've given the Board of Fish and the Board of Game the clear authority to adopt regulations that would protect this from happening. For example, if they wanted to say, well, if you're gonna do this, you do it only once every 6 months or something. We've given them the latitude that's necessary to protect the resource as well as provide for this activity to occur. And that's something I really don't want to change, because, again, that's clearly the board's responsibility for that particular purpose of protecting our fish and game resources. The member from Anchorage, 13A, that talked about that he felt the bill only, in relation to the blind, only allowed for you to hunt for them. That's not the case, I don't believe. However, as I agreed to with that particular member, I will research that further with the drafting attorney, and should this, which I'm sure it will, come back before us in reconsideration, I'll try to address that. If it's necessary, I don't feel it is right now, but I could be wrong. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I think we've probably had enough debate on the issue. Just point out, this is a vote for senior citizens and disabled members of Alaska. Thank you.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will vote for this legislation, but I will do so with great hesitation, because the bottom line here is, does this legislation increase or decrease the pressures on the resource? I do not think there is any dispute as to the purpose or the reason for this legislation. The fact of the matter is, human behavior being what it is these days, there will be ways where people will be able to probably get one or two more animals than they ordinarily would. We cannot treat urban and rural Alaska differently. And where in the outlying areas the culture is quite different from what we know and realize in urban Alaska, that is not the case in rural Alaska. So I'm going to vote for this legislation, but I would ask that members keep in mind the underlying bottom line, and that is, does this bill increase impact or pressures on the resource, or does it lessen it? Because I know that we all agree that this proxy effort is a good one and a reasonable one and one that we all want to be a part of. But the bottom line is, what does it do to the resource?
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 393 Resources Amendment pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Martin. Will the clerk tally the board?
25 yeas, 7 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 393 Resources Amendment has passed the House. Representative Choquette.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on 393.
Okay, notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 393. Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is an effective date clause, and I'd move that at this time.
Are there any objections to the effective date clause? But we do have to take a roll call on that. Ready for the question? The question is, shall the effective date clause be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Madam Clerk.
32 yeas, 0 nay.
Effective date clause adopted. Next item, Madam Clerk.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 408, Labor and Commerce, by the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to telephone service for the deaf, hard of hearing, and speech impaired. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with the House Committee Substitute Labor and Commerce with a technical title change. Signing do pass, Taylor, Bruckman, Donnelly, and Finkelstein. One committee substitute.
Having committee substitutes, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move that the House adopt the House Labor and Commerce Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 408.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the House Committee Substitute Labor and Commerce? Hearing none, the House Committee Substitute Labor and Commerce has been adopted. Madam Clerk, are there any amendments pending?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no pending amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I'd move that the House Labor and Commerce Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 408 be engrossed and advanced to third reading.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance? Hearing none, would the clerk please give the bill its third reading?
House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 408, Labor and Commerce, an act relating to telephone service for the deaf, hard of hearing, and speech impaired, and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Taylor.
It's my understanding that there was some information relevant to this legislation concerning the effective date and that it needed to move with some dispatch regarding April 1st, but I don't recall what that was. Somebody could clarify it. Appreciate it.
Representative Ellis.
Speaker, could we have a brief at ease, please?
Would the House stand at ease? Before the at ease, we had the bill before us in third reading and under debate. Are you ready for the question? Representative Taylor?
Well, just while some people are coming back into the chamber, Mr. Speaker, the reason I had asked the question was I had believed that I recalled from the committee testimony when the sponsor was there that there was some need for dispatch, and it's my recollection now, and I'd like to thank the members for refreshing it for me, was that APUC will enter into regulations effective, I believe, as of the 1st of April, and to get this into those regulations so it can take effect, it has to move by that period of time. Otherwise, it might be as much as a year's delay before this could take effect, and that's the primary reason for moving it at this time. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 408, Labor and Commerce, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire it? Representative Martin, we'll open the roll for you. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk take the roll?
28 yeas, 0 nay.
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 408, Labor and Commerce, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of that clause? Hearing none, the effective date clause has been adopted. Madam Clerk.
House Joint Resolution Number 70 by Representatives Lehman and B. Davis, urging the United States Congress to amend the Internal Revenue Code to increase the personal exemption and to provide a parental child care exemption. The Hess Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a C.S. Hess with the same title and due pass. Signing due pass, Lincoln, Carney, B. Davis, Gonzalez, C. Davis, and Hanley. The Finance Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with the C.S. Finance with a new title and due pass. Signing due pass, McLean, Boyer, Brown, Barnes, Jacko, Phillips, Sharp, and Larson. With no recommendation, Navarre. I have committee substitutes.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Move that the House adopt the Finance Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 70 as the item before us.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of that committee substitute from Finance? Hearing none, that C.S. has been adopted. Any amendments pending?
No, Mr. Speaker.
No pending amendments, being it is a joint resolution. Mr. Majority Leader, being joint.
Move that the House Finance Committee substitute for HJR number 70 be engrossed and advanced to third reading.
Are there any objections as to the motion to advance? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please give the resolution its third reading?
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 70 Finance, urging the United States Congress to amend the Internal Revenue Code to increase the personal exemption for children under 18 and to provide a parental child care exemption.
Third reading and under debate. Ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 70 Finance pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
32 yeas, 0 nay.
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 70 Finance has passed the House. Madam Clerk.
House Concurrent Resolution Number 49 by Representatives Koponen and Moyer, recognizing 1992 as the 75th anniversary of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The House Committee considered the bill and recommended it be replaced with a C.S. Hess with the same title, signing DuPass, Hanley, C. Davis, Gonzalez, B. Davis, Carney, and Miller. I have one committee substitute.
Having a committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move that the House adopt the House Hess Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution Number 49.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, that committee substitute, Hess, has been adopted. Madam Clerk, any amendments?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Having no amendments, then it is a concurrent resolution, so it's in its second and final reading. Available for debate. Are you ready for the... Representative Taylor.
Mr. Speaker, I noted that in the resolve clause that the legislature recognizes 1992 as the 75th anniversary, I wondered if the reason for putting this in the form of a resolution was to make certain that other people would add the numbers the same way, or if there was some concern or question that people might not add the numbers up exactly the same way. I was a little worried about that.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 49 Hess pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Madam Clerk, tally the board.
32 yeas, 0 nay.
Committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 49 Hess has passed the House. We will go to the citations and then to the bottom of the calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, there are seven citations that appear on today's calendar. First, honoring Christine Vanetti Waddle, honoring James T. Hutchinson, Sr., honoring the winning ice carving teams, honoring Command Sergeant Major Michael E. Pitchett, honoring the 1992 Division Biathlon Competition, honoring winning ice carving teams, honoring Kenneth Wallstad, 1991 Outstanding Fish and Wildlife Trooper of the Year. Move and ask unanimous consent that the citations be approved.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of any of those citations? Hearing none, the citations have been approved. Madam Clerk, this brings us down to the bottom of the calendar.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 52, an act relating to child support for children who are not minors and representation of their interests during certain proceedings. We have a second reading.
Okay, my understanding is that it is in second reading and there are two amendments pending. Madam Clerk, would you make reference to amendment number one?
Amendment number one by Representative Taylor.
Representative Taylor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'd move and ask unanimous consent on amendment number one.
Objections, Representative Vollmer?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to make an objection just for purposes of making a brief statement, and then I'd like to remove my objection. Mr. Speaker, this amendment is new to me this morning. The bill has gone through three committees of this body and has not been there's not been any discussion of this concept. When the sponsor of the amendment showed this to me this morning, I did try to have a brief conversation with the Child Support Enforcement Agency to try to understand what the impact might be. And I did get some notes that suggested there might be some problems, but in the spirit of trying to cooperate with the minority, I'm not going to object to this because of the language that says that the court may provide for it. During the hearing process, if it appears that this does raise some substantial problems, we may have to change some of this language. But I did want to put the body on notice of the fact that I'm not 100% sure of what the impact will be, but if it is as what I believe the sponsor is trying to get at, I can support the amendment. With that, I will remove my objection.
Are there any objections to the adoption of amendment number one? Any objections? Hearing none, amendment number one has been adopted. Would the clerk make reference to amendment number two?
Amendment number two by Representative Taylor.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move Amendment Number 2 and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objection. Representative Taylor?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. This language that I'm asking that we delete from the from this legislation does not really bear upon the question. The essential issue before us in the legislation is one of whether or not a young person who's still living at home and working towards getting their high school degree should not receive child support. And I don't think there's too much objection to that question. And in fact, I really don't have that great of a degree of objection, although I believe that children after the age of 18, when they become adults, that anything their parents do for them should be considered a gift and not an obligation, and that's been the holding of our courts. So this makes major changes in that regard. But if it's only for the purpose of getting the child a high school education or pass their vocational degree up to the age of 19, I don't have too much heartburn with that. What I do have a concern with is adding a whole new concept within our laws, and that is the concept of a designee. The language that I'm asking that you delete is language that says, or designee of the spouse, guardian or designee of the parent or guardian of a designee, etc. And I don't find such designee language other places, nor do I believe that it's appropriate that the spouse who has custody should be designating any person other than the other spouse, the other parent, as being the person to have that custodial relationship or receive or distribute those funds. Now, obviously, there may be a situation where the spouse, let's assume what normally happens here. Mom's got a 18-plus-year-old child who wants to go to vocational training, say, at the Voc Tech Center. Well, obviously, the child's not going to be in mom's custody, especially if she's living here, say, in southeast Alaska. So as a consequence, the child is going to be in someone else's custody. But that begs the whole issue, you see, because once that child obtained the age of 18, wasn't a child anyhow. We're creating a figment of everyone's imagination here. When we pass this legislation, you're basically extending the term minority to age 19. That child has the right at age 18 to go out and contract to get an apartment, buy a car. If they break into my house, their name is published in the newspaper. They are thrown in jail because they are an adult after age 18. They just can't buy cigarettes out of vending machines or go into bars. So as a consequence, Mr. Speaker, they are an adult. They have the right to be in their own custody at that point. And there's no reason that we need to have a designee. The designee language, I believe, is being put in there solely for the purpose of providing a legality to a concept that doesn't today exist in law that we are now creating, and that is that since some sort of custodial relationship still exists, that custody relationship has to carry with it the monetary relationship, and transferring the money can only occur from the payor father through the mother to her designee. I don't think it has to be all that complicated. Furthermore, if the First Amendment that has now been accepted remains within the legislation, it may very well obviate any need for this language, thus meaning that the court, through its order, could easily designate that it goes to the child or goes to the school where the child's at, so that the father knows that the money is actually going to the kid or going towards the kid's education instead of going towards buying mom's new boyfriend a new Corvette. And don't think that doesn't happen, too. So my suggestion here is by removing this language of designee, you're really doing no disservice to this legislation now that we have allowed, through the court's approval, the money to be paid either directly to the child or in some other fashion. So the kid would still get the money. Dad's still going to pay. And we don't need to have moms out there designating other people to receive it. And the reason I raise the issue, Mr. Speaker, is that Right now, nothing in our law provides for that type of designation. And it is not uncommon to find out that your kids left state with your ex-wife last year. They're currently living with her parents. The grandparents may be in Idaho. She's now living in Albuquerque. Guess what? You're still sending the child support payments through child support enforcement or directly to her in Albuquerque, and the grandparents ain't even seeing the money. That is not uncommon to have happen, that misuses like that occur, because there's nothing in our law that says that you ever get an audit on how that money was spent. Did it actually go to the kids' clothing, to the kids' needs, and the rest of it? So I don't think setting up this new concept of designees is a very good idea. If there's a real problem with this, I think we can take care of it on Monday. And I would be happy if you're willing to do so, because I'm as hungry as everybody else is in here, to shut up, get off the floor, and we can put this thing off till then. If not, I'd rather see it just passed, and I'll be happy to work with the sponsor of the legislation over the weekend and next Monday to clarify any problems that this may have created.
Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, the reason that the language or designee of the spouse or guardian is in this legislation is because it is the language which was recommended by the Family Support Task Force, which is the reason why I introduced House Bill 52. The Family Support Task Force language, recommendation number 48, says the legislature should provide for the extension of child support to individuals up to the age of 19 if they are unmarried and living with a parent, their legal guardian, or the designee of a parent or a legal guardian, have not graduated from high school, and are actively pursuing a high school degree. The reason I believe that the Family Support Task Force included the language or designee of the spouse or guardian is to recognize that in many cases, particularly in Alaska, where children in their last couple of years of high school may be someplace other than in their hometown. A Bethel kid may go to Anchorage and stay with an aunt for purposes of finishing high school there, may go to the Seward Skill Center and live with a sister. The purpose here in terms of designating that language is to clarify that the support payment is to be made for purposes of allowing this person to finish school, and that it is all right for the designee or a guardian to have that money. Now, it is true that the minority leader's First Amendment that allows the judge to consider that in some cases the child, him or herself, may get the money, may in some cases mean that this isn't necessary. But the judge may also decide that some children, even at age 18, are not sufficiently responsible with regard to dollars and cents to be the person who should be the custodian, so to speak, of that child support payment. It may very well be that that child has proven that the money is going to be spent on more Nintendo games than on actually providing the care and feeding of that child for purposes of finishing school. So, Mr. Speaker, I continue to object to this amendment, and I would say that there is really nothing new about the concept that a designee or a guardian may be the person that cares for a child, even though child support payments are being made. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we have amendment number 2 before us and still under debate. Is there any further debate upon it? Are you ready for the question? Representative Taylor?
Just very briefly in answer to the objections, Mr. Speaker. Number 1, the designation or allowing a designee into this system, I mean, very few things are fought over like custody of children. Very few things. And to provide for a designee thing is a whole brand new thing. I really don't think we want to do it just so we can get some kids some child support past age 18. That's number 1. Number 2, I firmly believe that nobody is probably better at figuring out where that money ought to go to than that child once they reach age 18. And that if that child decides to spend it all on candy or a new car, I guess that's the child's decision, but they are no longer a child under our law. We all should remember that. And they probably will do a much better job of accounting to themselves on where the money came from and where what it was spent for than the spouse may very well have done for them in the past. Real life teaches us that, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 2 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
14 yeas, 16 nay.
Amendment Number 2 has failed adoption. Does the clerk have any further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I'd move that sponsor substitute for House Bill Number 52 be engrossed and advanced to third reading.
Are there any objections to the motion to advance? Hearing no objection, Madam Clerk, would you please give the bill its third reading?
Sponsor substitute for House Bill Number 52 amended, an act relating to child support for children who are not minors and representation of their interests during certain proceedings.
Third reading, under debate. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall sponsor substitute for House Bill 52 amended pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
30 yeas, 0 nay.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 52 amended has passed the House.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, I would serve notice of reconsideration on SHP 52 amended.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Representative Navarro, would the House stand at ease? Order. Before the ease, we had just finished our calendar, and this brings us to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask the members to please take out their limbo files at this time for what I hope will be two very quick items, simple items to come before us. At this time, I'd move that the House enter the limbo file for the specific purpose of considering House Joint Resolution Number 48 relating to a Pan-American Energy Alliance.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Mr. Speaker, at this point, I would defer to the representative from downtown Fairbanks for a very brief explanation of the Senate changes.
Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the floor, when we passed this bill, there were some concerns that the figures and perhaps the percentages that we used in the resolution weren't as current as they might have been, and what we've done is gone through and updated information and percentages. For instance, on line 6, we changed the 1987 to 1990, and in that, making that current, the increase in the oil for import purposes goes from 41% to 47%. It's those kinds of changes that we made throughout the resolution. We also made some changes with regard to changes which have occurred in the organizational structure. The Southwest Energy Council is now called the Energy Council, and the executive director has changed. And so it's just those kinds of technical changes and updates and information.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I would at this time move that the House concur in the Senate amendments to Senate Committee Substitute for HJR Number 48 ITT and recommend that the members vote yes.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Joint Resolution 48? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
30 yeas, 0 nay.
The House concurs, thus adopting Senate Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 48. Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I would move that the House enter the limbo file for the specific purpose of considering the Conference Committee report on Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 349, an act relating to the implementation of special federal programs for unemployment compensation.
Are there any objections in going into the limbo file? Hearing none.
Speaker, I would defer to the representative from Spinard for a brief explanation.
Representative Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the only change the conference committee made from the House version was to delete the words by regulation on line 6 of page 1. The reason for that was there's an ongoing program that's been adopted in response to the opportunity to utilize some federal funds, and having those words in there would necessitate them going back out and doing the procedure, and would slow down the access of those funds by the state.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I move at this time that the House adopt the conference committee report on Senate Bill number 349.
Are there any objections? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the conference committee substitute for Senate Bill 349 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
30 yeas, 0 no.
The conference committee substitute for Senate Bill 349 has been adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, our last item under unfinished business, request for excused absences, and there are two.
There's an effective date of...
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Speaker. I will, at this time, move the effective date clause within the conference committee report on Senate Bill number 349.
Madam Clerk, the vote did tally beyond 70. Okay. Are there any objection to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing none, it's adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under unfinished business, two requests for excused absence. First for Representative Larson, 7:30 p.m., 3:27:92 to plain time, 3:29:92, and from 8 p.m. on 4:16:92 to plain time, 4:20:92. And for Representative Baker, amending his previous excused absence as follows, 4 p.m., 3:27:92 to plain time on 3:30:92. And also for Representative Baker, 4 p.m. on 3:30:92 to plain time 3:31:92. And move that the House approve those requests.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, those people listed off by the Majority Leader on those specified dates are excused from the call of the House. Any further unfinished business? Announcements of standing committees or special committees. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to announce to members of the Resources Committee that we will hold a work session today on House Bill 540. Thank you. From 3 to 5 in the Resources.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Carney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Due to a lack of a quorum, the Hess Committee did not hear the bill scheduled for today, and so for that reason, House Bill 474, Drug Testing for School Bus Drivers, and House Bill 512, Education Goals Today, will be heard on April 2nd for House Bill 512, and Wednesday, April the 1st for House Bill, no, I'm backwards. House Bill 474 is on Thursday, April the 2nd, House Bill 512 on Wednesday, April the 1st. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further? Representative Donnelly.
I think we'll start judiciary at 2 o'clock today, Mr. Speaker, instead of 1:30, to give people a chance to get reorganized.
Any further committee announcements? General announcements? Representative Ballmer?
Brief at ease, Mr. Speaker.
I'll stand at ease. That's a good way to end it at ease. Huh? Representative Larson? Oh. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Finance Committee will start at 2 o'clock today also.
Representative Cabina.
Mr. Speaker, we under standing committee reports. Are we under...
Whatever you have, Representative Cabina, will fit.
I must be hungry. We held over, the State Affairs Committee held over House Bill 528 until Monday. That's Public Works Contracts and Wage Increases. Mm-hmm.
Under announcements, I wish most of you could be up here looking down at that beautiful bouquet with Representative Betty Davis there with those colors on it. It looks absolutely beautiful. Any further announcements?
Mr. Speaker, I went over there to find out what the note said on there, and she quickly jerked it off and put it in her pocket and said, 32 years with the same man, and I couldn't read her note, so I was more interested in the note than the flowers.
At this time, the chair will appoint a House investigating committee to find, and then some, yeah. Any further announcements? Special orders? Representative Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to request permission of the body to address the injured process for injured Alaskan workers.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. An unfortunate and damaging situation exists in the Alaska Department of Labor, a situation which undermines and does great harm to injured Alaskans and the programs and protections created by law to ensure that proper care is given Alaskans injured on the job. I refer to the allegations and complaints made against the director of the Workers' Compensation Division. The director has testified before various legislative committees this week and last, most recently before the House Finance Subcommittee. It is disappointing and sad to say that damage control has become damage out of control. The director in her dealings and discussions and decisions with hearing officers and board members of the Workers' Compensation Board has shown poor judgment. She has shown poor judgment by her interference with ongoing adjudications, by threatening reprisal to department employees when her wishes were ignored, even though her wishes violated regulatory or statutory imperatives. She showed poor judgment by professing to guard the rights of the injured worker while taking actions contrary to the statutory intent of the Workers' Compensation Act, and by terminating the services of many board members before replacements had been selected, thus creating a judicial void, an unnecessary burden and inconvenience on the system. She showed poor judgment by ignoring the necessity to educate new board members, even though the new appointees represented more than a majority of the board and all lacked worker compensation board experience. Mr. Speaker, during the House Finance Labor Subcommittee hearing Tuesday, our efforts were to get to the facts. And Mr. Speaker, those facts are disturbing. The corroborated information given by several hearing officers, former and active board members, and a former division director all point to a need for further examination of the serious charges against the current director of the Workers' Compensation Division. These charges include interfering with ongoing adjudications and making retaliatory threats against department employees. In addition, I have personally received complaints and concerns about Ms. Rexwinkle. The one common theme in the comments of those contacting my office is the feeling that the current director lacks the judgment and sense of fairness necessary to direct this extremely important division of the Department of Labor. Based on the input I have received from constituents and the testimony heard from several legislative hearings, Mr. Speaker, as well as coupled with the serious nature of some of the allegations, I feel that in fairness to all, this body should, at a minimum, call for allowing the Commissioner of Labor to make the changes he feels necessary in his department to move the division beyond this damaging and disturbing controversy. It is a sad situation. Mr. Speaker, We need to clear the air or clear the department. There can be no hint, no hint of impropriety in a division whose task is the adjudication of disputes. Thank you.
Under special orders, Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak on two subjects and have permission of the floor to do so. The first is hard votes, and the second is workers' comp.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed, Representative.
Let me first address my comments more in response. I wasn't intending to speak on this subject on workers' comp. This is the first time in the last roughly 9 years of this state that we've had a workers' comp director that whose position and selection was not dictated to whoever held the job of hiring that person by the labor unions of Alaska. A transition is occurring. That transition happens to be there maybe ought to be a little more level playing field in that department. Now, if in fact this person has overstepped her bounds and has done things inappropriate, I'm sure that there are zealous members around here that will call that to our attention. And I seem to be hearing it more and more frequently. But let's just admit the fact that this one is not being run by the same group. And if you really want to get rid of any hint of impropriety, then maybe we ought to go back through and examine the records of the Workers' Comp Commission for how many people off of this floor may direct with that commission in the past and attempted to influence things going on in front of that commission. It may have been their right. It may have been the duty as they saw fit to carry it out as their designated job or as being a representative. But it was it improper? I would submit to you that on occasion it may have been more of an influence than was probably appropriate for the office or the time. Enough on the subject of workers' comp. I'd rather instead address what I call hard votes. It's easy to stand on the popular side with the mob, to listen to their cheers when victory's been obtained. That's the easy vote. It's tough to stand up against threats and intimidation. In the 8 years that I've had the privilege of serving on this floor, the first of such votes that I encountered was on Alaska Hire. I stood at the back of the chamber back here. During that debate, I stood with my arm around my colleague who was of the other party while he wept openly during the debate. That was a hard vote. Then I remember the elf, the pressures, the controversy on that. I know that I won't live long enough to forget the first subsistence votes or those during the special session or the pressures brought on myself or my colleagues during that vote. Nor will I soon forget, Mr. Speaker, the vote occurring on Wednesday. These hard votes don't affect just one party or just one person. They affect us all. And I don't think we as a group go through them without it impacting all of us here on the floor. And it impacts us maybe a little differently. The only point I wanted to make in raising this subject was that after a hard vote, it's important that we all get back into the healing process as quickly as possible, because this body cannot withstand long the types of hard comments and caustic statements that sometimes come out of those situations. And thus, I just encourage my colleagues and myself to work harder at getting back to the business of the body and getting matters moved through here. I want to applaud the Speaker for his assistance in this regard, and also the Majority Leader and his and the Rules Chairman today. Thank you both.
thank you, Representative Taylor. The last part of your remarks, I think we all definitely agree with. Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have the privilege of the floor on the same subject?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
I certainly, too, Mr. Speaker, like to associate myself with the remarks of the previous speaker on hard votes. The only comment I wanted to make on workers' comp was that the minority leader's remarks seemed to indicate that we've had up till now a series of politically motivated directors of the workers' comp division. And my memory isn't perfect on this, but I don't think that's the case at all. I think that the one director was in there for a very long period of time, Jacqueline McClintock. Someone could probably tell me exactly the period, but it was at least through a few administrations. And I don't think there's anyone who alleged that it was a politically motivated appointment or that there was any unfairness in continuing that position. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I'd like to ask permission of the body to speak on hard votes also.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak on specifically the hard vote which took place on Wednesday, the right to strike issue that was before us on the override. It was a very hard vote for me. Had enormous amount of pressure on me from both sides of an issue that I think had very, very strong cases made for those particular sides, and what it boiled down to is a judgment call. It was a no-win situation for probably everyone in this room. There was, sure, I was leveraged like a lot of other people on both sides, and it was not a real pleasant time for me. But it's part of, I think, the responsibility that each of us have in seeking an office like this. We're not going to always have easy votes to cast. But the only comment that I would like to make is my appreciation to all the members of this body, and certainly the particular my roommate and the speaker and a few other people that actually kind of helped me be able to look at things with a clear mind. And also I think Senator from Juneau that sponsored that legislation showed me a lot of class in suggesting that I really needed to do what I felt was right for the state of Alaska on either side of the issue, and not worry about some of the politically motivated effects that sometimes are suggested. And it was, with some pride to say that, that I felt that there wasn't one member of this body or the other body that suggested anything that, to me, that I felt to be improper. I felt there's a lot of feelings, very strong feelings on both sides of the issue. There's some difference in philosophy between members, but in all the members that aren't in either one of these bodies that I had to deal with, it was really a relief to be able to feel that way about the members of this body. And I think it goes a long ways for future relationships on other issues, many other issues, and hopefully many years that we'll all be working together. Thank you.
Good. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like permission to speak on hard votes and easy answers.
Are there any objections?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's lots of hard votes left this session, and there are no easy answers.
Apart from the known and unknown, what else is there? Representative Ellis.
Speaker, I move that the House stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Monday.
11 a.m. Monday.